Hello and welcome everyone to our webinar, the TMS Wiki's webinar with Stephen Ray Ozanich, author of The Great Pain Deception. It is such a pleasure to have him here tonight. His book was written and published 2 years ago, and since then it has absolutely taken the TMS world by storm. It is quite the phenomena. And we have a huge number of people here right now. Last count, it was about 26. And we are absolutely thrilled for what is coming. So I asked Steve what he wanted to do tonight, and we tossed around a couple of ideas. But mainly, I think that what Steve wants to do is to give people a chance to ask him questions. So our reading group that meets every Tuesday night has been reading Steve's book for 6.5 months now, and we have finally gotten to the end. It has been wonderful. It has provoked some terrific discussions, and I think this is a great opportunity for those who've read his book to ask him the questions that you always wanted to know. My hope is that this is going to become a great resource for people who finish his book and have some questions, and then can listen and find out the questions that other people had and that were answered by the man himself. So in terms of how we do this, Steve's book starts out with an introduction to TMS, and then it dives on into his story. I think the people here don't need an introduction to TMS, but maybe that would help. Steve, do you want to, shall we start this off just by saying, what is TMS? Can you tell us what TMS is, just in the basic, most basic terms for newcomers?
I've never heard of it before. How do you spell it? Yeah.
Tango Mike Sierra.
That's a good question. You know, I did a lecture a couple weeks ago in Youngstown, and I tried to give them a little quick history of it, because the people you're talking to have never heard of it before. Where these people, they're pretty much experts on it. So it's a different point of view. They ask deeper questions in places like this. But, you know, it started off, I actually asked Dr. Sarno last month if he could remember which year that he came up with that. Because I was really curious if that was like 70 or 72 or whatever. And he said it was just sometime in the 70s. That's all he could remember. It started off, of course, as tension myositis. Because myo means muscle. And he originally observed that there was muscle involvement in pain. But as he grew and he learned, because he learned all the way till the last year he retired, that it was more than that. It also involved nerves and tendons. And so he switched that word out from myoneural. And of course, at the end of his career, he was referring it sometimes as TMS, the mind-body syndrome. So because it involves the immune system too. Not only the derma, but the organs and vision and hearing and everything. Pretty much everything we get is from a mind-body process, with the exception of congenital things, you know, or accidents, or there's poisons you can get in your systems and things like that. But so it evolved through the years. And of course, I told him last time I talked to him that he changed the world. And what more can we ask from him? But the world doesn't know it yet. They don't quite know it yet. We're some of the original people here that actually have seen the power of what he's done. And I think he would like it to carry on. And I'm pretty honored to be one of those people to keep pushing it. Actually, he sent me an email last week, and he's never done that before, out of the blue. Just out of the blue, just congratulate me on educating the public. And I thought, wow, I wonder what he's heard. I wanted to ask him, what have you heard? But he'll never answer. He's really intensely private. He won't ever answer follow-up questions. He may answer one, and that's it. But yeah, it's quite an honor to be doing this. I've had a lot of successes in the 2 years that it's been out. Now, I did this 10 years before this book was done. I was helping people in person and online and on the telephone. But since the book's come out, I have over 5,000 emails now, and they're all really great emails. And the people are healing, some of them quicker than others. And, of course, the people who are taking longer are the ones that are really concerned, you know, of course. That's the problem. They're the ones, they feel like they're the exception. But I felt like I was the exception, too. That I was in that 2% that never moved. But I proved that wrong, because I really wanted to heal. And these people will heal. But I think the major problem that I see, I do about 4 consultations a week now, and I answer about 5 to 15 emails a day. It's the same thing, you know. It's fear and doubt. Fear and doubt. If they had more confidence, of course, they would heal quickly. But the reason that they have TMS is they don't have that much confidence, you know. And a lot of people were brought up in negative environments, and they see only the dark side of things or the bad side of things. And so it gets very complex at some point because the brain's involved, you know, and the brain has a mind of its own, I like to say. But the people are healing. You know, when they look back, they've actually healed in the last couple of months, but they don't think that they have. Until I take them back, where were you 2 months ago? Oh, I couldn't stand up. I'm walking half a mile now, but I've still got a lot of pain. But you're up now, 2 months later. You're walking. You're healing. And that's the way it worked for me. I specifically drew out the process in the book to show how difficult it was. And after the book came out, I got emails from a couple TMS psychologists to say, thank you. Thank you for showing that it's not easy. And sometimes it takes a lot of hard work. And it did. I mean, even up to a year later, I felt like I hadn't recovered as much as I wanted to. There were days that I couldn't move again. It would do, well, they're calling them extinction bursts now, I guess. You know, it would always just jump right out again, just out of nowhere, for seemingly no reason, although there was a deeper reason, I'm sure, for all of it, but I couldn't figure it out. But I just stayed persistent. And I think the main thing is you have to shift awareness that obsessive focus is completely on the symptom. Thousands and thousands of times a day, people are their mind's eye is peeking at it. That's why I keep talking about purpose in these consultations. When you can shift your awareness to the purpose in life, to a goal, some way that you want to live your life, all of the pain begins to fade, because now your new obsessive focus becomes that purpose. It shifts from body to purpose. And I think that's the best way to heal. Now, in between there's a lot of work to do. And of course, one of the biggest questions I get is, you know, do you have to find the emotion? You know, well, no, you don't have to. I think that story of Helen confused a lot of people. You know, it was so rare. And he even said that was the only time he ever saw that in his career, where an unconscious emotion would burst through your consciousness. But I've never seen anybody have to track down those emotions. You know, it's more important to understand why you need to repress, why you need to be perfect, rather than all these things that you're holding within your deeper brain. Why do you have to feel like you're perfect? You know, and that comes from rejection, separation anxiety. You know, as little kids, there was something there. They either feared it or they did have separation. And that becomes the modus operandi at some point. You know, they rev up their minds. They start racing and racing and racing because they're not connected. That's why I created that word called tricordification. I can see it. And I just watched the video before I came here. Her name is McGonlin or something like that. McGonally. It was brilliant. It was brilliant. She was talking about stress, how they discovered that stress is only unhealthy if you view it as unhealthy. But stress, the people that viewed stress as a healthy part of their lives, they didn't seem to have any health problems. And that's the way to view it, really. You know, that's all about perception. But, oh, before I forget, too, Michael Galinsky contacted me and wanted me to give a message about his project, you know. And he wants people to know here about the storyofpain.com. Okay, and the Facebook page, storyofpain.com, and he's got the Twitter account up now, at Story of Pain. And they're getting ready to do their Kickstarter. I don't know how many people know what that is, but it's an organization that raises the money. The public can come in and donate money until they hit the threshold. That's pretty much how everyone's doing these projects now, is they're raising money from the grassroots level. And then people become part of the project. So if anybody wants to become part of that project, they're welcome to. But he's got a lot of footage done now. He's got some really cool people filmed, and it's got some great conversations there. And but yes, I don't know if it's good to review the fundamentals of TMS or not. I will say this, it works, but you have to have confidence to heal. And the people always, every time I talk to them, they always feel they're the exception. I'm going to be the one that can't heal, and that will keep you from healing. You know, you have to get in there and say, I'm going to take control over my life and my health, and I'm going to heal. I remember seeing my pain loop as this neuropeptide chain loop. You know, the thought comes first. Before any emotion can happen, you have a thought, whether it's happiness or sadness or anger. The thought has to create it first. So if you're going to keep recreating these thoughts of pain and these thoughts of negativity and these thoughts of helplessness, that's what you get. You get caught in the victimization neurotransmitters, and you keep reproducing those. They come out of the pituitary gland. They go through the bloodstream into the matching receptor cell, and they attach themselves to the cell, and they create that experience over and over and over. As long as you keep thinking the same way, it just keeps recreating the same experience. I remember thinking, I'm going to break this, you know, I'm going to break this thing. And I would like give myself a burst of adrenaline, like I had just came out of a parachute or something, out of a plane, you know, trying to break that loop of creating this pain day after day after day. So I was always mixing things up with soothing music, and I would run, and I would watch comedies, and keep trying to break up those victimization neurotransmitters. And of course, Dr. Sarno always said, you know, it was about thinking. This thing is not about doing things. It's a thinking process. And that, I think that's what it is. You know, change the way you view the pain, change the way you react to it. You just have to take control of your life. And I know it's easier said than done. It definitely is easier said than done. You know, some people that have talked to me have had serious tragedies in their life, and it's very tough, very tough. But they still heal. They still can heal. And, of course, I told you earlier, my favorite topic is why people won't accept it. That's the thing. For 10 years, I explained TMS, and I get so tired of it. You know, I get so burned out on it. But I've switched to why people don't want to heal. Why they would rather limp around the rest of their lives than accept it. To me, that's the most fascinating process in this whole thing. And that's all I'm writing now in papers, is why people don't want to heal, why they don't want to heal. And it's complex. You know, I can see about six or seven reasons why, but I imagine the people here want to heal, and they just want to know how. Well, here's the secret. Now, there is no secret. You have control of your life. You have complete control of your life, and you can heal. You can change the way your body reacts, and it begins with a thought process. And I think when I look back on Dr. Sarno's work, that there's two statements he made that really changed the way I saw it. They were both in Healing Back Pain, my favorite book. But the one was, is you must confront TMS. Fight it, or the symptoms will continue. I was always laying around, you know, waiting for the pain to go away. So he said the most difficult thing was to become more aggressive physically. And I think people do have to do that. But sometimes if they jump in really early, it frightens them. You know, it frightens them. And they kind of begin to back off. And then the doubts begin to pour in. Because I did the same thing month after month after month for a year probably. The doubts come pouring in when the pain comes striking. But persistence will pay off. Changing your thinking process. Soothing yourself, too. You have to soothe yourself. You know, if you have TMS, the word T stands for tension. So you have a ton of tension in your life, and you probably don't even know what it's like not to be tense because you have no other reference point or frame of reference. And so Miller's work really helped me, Dr. Emmett Miller. You know, I began to soothe my autonomic nervous system and begin to view life from a different perception where I thought things were bad. I began to shift my awareness to they're good. This is actually good. You know, I can actually walk. Some people can't even walk when they had TMS pain. And it's been an interesting journey these past 2 years. It's been fascinating. When I do consultations with people in Singapore or Ireland or Norway, Germany, they'll often hold up his books in German language and Spanish language. So it's spreading. The news is spreading. And these people that are listening here, they're part of this. They're part of this fantastic movement that he started. And
that is wonderful. And I love the way that you're emphasizing fear and anxiety and soothing, and how important soothing is. It seems like it is so important to be able to learn about the level of tension in your body and teach yourself to soothe soothe yourself. Can you say any more about that? Like any strategies which you can use for that? It just seems so important. I can't imagine skipping over that.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's a big part of the life that people usually beat the hell out of themselves so that they're not good enough or they should have done this. I remember that connected with me too, the tyranny of the should. Mm. He quoted Karen Horney's work from the late 1890s and early 1900s. And that was, yeah, I was always thinking about that. I should have done this. I should have done that. I should be doing this more. I should. And the whole time I forget to actually live, to enjoy my life. I was always preparing for life, never actually living it, you know, within the moment. And that's huge too. That's huge too. You know, the people, well, OCD is a very extreme form of TMS, you know, where if you keep repetitively doing things, you're thinking, you're using the thinking part of the process instead of the feeling. It avoids the emotional pain, the heartache, if you can think. Now, right. And Carl Jung said, you know, nothing inhibits feeling like thinking. Well, that's a survival mechanism. When their heart is hurt and cut and they're afraid, they'll go right into the thinking mode. And nobody is as good a thinker as a TMSer, because these people are extraordinarily bright and they're analytical and they live in their heads too much. You know, they're living way, way too much in their heads, thinking about everything that could happen or should have happened instead of actually jumping in there and living life, because you're going to get hurt and rejected again at some point, you know. But I know low self-esteem doesn't like to get rejected. And of course, nobody likes to get rejected, of course, you know. But I think the best thing is to jump in with purpose. And I would say just about everyone that contacts me, they're lost. They don't know what direction to go in life. They don't. They're like hoping I'll point out a direction for them, you know. But they have to. They're kind of stuck in what I call the interstice in the book, that liminal threshold. They don't know which way to go through. The first door is closed, but the second door hasn't opened yet. The limited. But that's where all transformation takes place in life. Within that dark time, all transformation took place for me during these down times. That's the thing, that's the catalyst that's pushing you. That's the shadow part, pushing you to become something better. Every strength that we have now was once a weakness, but we worked very hard at overcoming it because we didn't want anyone to see that weakness in us. And so there's a reason for this. We become much better people. And of course, he said, the good doctor said, after 50 years, I came to realize that these people were all suffering because they were nice. You know, they wanted to be good people. They wanted to do what was right. They wanted everyone to be happy. Well, that's deeply enraging because the person themselves isn't happy inside. And you can never make anyone happy in a relationship if you're not happy yourself. And you should never hope that somebody just make you happy suddenly, because happiness comes from within. You need to find happiness and peace within yourself. And then you will add to somebody else's life like they will add to yours. And of course, that's hinting about relationship, and that's huge too. Relationship and that connectivity. You know, I was just interesting. I saw that video just now, and she was a psychologist, that this is good stress. Stress was only bad if you viewed it as bad. It was actually healthy if you viewed it as healthy. And that they were seeing, you know, oxytocin is one of the good neurotransmitters. It's a stress transmitter, but it's a good one. It actually heals the heart when it's damaged because of the stress, of good stress. But they also found out that when we're stressed out, that's when we need a hug. They actually call the oxytocin like the hugging neurotransmitter.
Right.
That's the time when we need to connect. The stress is telling us we need people to surround us right now and to be there for us and to be connected. So it's fascinating. To me, it's all about becoming whole, using the shadow, the darker, weaker aspects of ourselves to become better people. Now, I know a lot of people, they tune in and they'll want to do a consultation, and they'll have a pencil in their hand and a piece of paper, and they'll say, okay, give me everything I should do during the day. You know, they want to write down, when I get up, what should I do, step by step by step. My point is to stop all that. You know, stop. You're living in your head. You're trying to live according to some type of template instead of flowing freely. Destructure your life at some time. You know, that's what I'm saying. Get rid of all those things you should be doing. I've got to be regimented. Now at 10:10, I'm supposed to be happy at this day. You know, and at 10:11, I'm going to be sad. And 10:12, no, yeah, that's not the way to do it. But that's part of the OCD-like obsessive compulsive personality that drives a lot of the severe TMS symptoms, you know. And
that's really interesting. You mentioned that the destructuring and how important destructuring is, and I totally can relate that to my own experience of meeting people on the forum and learning their stories. It seems like a lot of the people that you interact with, they're coiled tight like a spring, you know, like they're just ready to go and they have to do this. And is that related to what you were talking about
yeah,
before?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I've always told people I was like a cat stuck on the ceiling, its claws in the ceiling, you know.
Right.
It's about unwinding. It's about destructuring. It's about flowing. It's about saying, you know, I'm just going to leave this afternoon and I'm going to go visit somebody. I'm going to go connect with somebody, you know, and I'll go help somebody is even better. They found out that the body heals itself faster when we're helping people. Mm-hmm. As people keep asking me, are you experiencing TMS symptoms? I say no, because I have occasionally, you know, if I get really stressed, but every time I help people, I heal because right. They are me. I am that person. And whenever I help them, I am helping myself. But I feel good. I feel good, you know, and it's really a pleasure to help people. It really, really is a great joy. And I recommend everyone try it. It's a good way to heal. And a lot of people will say, I'm not even healed yet, and I'm helping my neighbors, and I'm helping my family. I said, I know. I started sketching my book out before I was done healing. There's something inside of us that knows it's true already and that it's going to happen, you know. But there's another good point. You need to visualize yourself as being healed. That way you're pulled along. You'll start creating this whole new sense about yourself. And I always saw myself as broken. So, you know, it's tough. You know, when you've practiced thinking in bad ways your entire life, it's tough to change quickly. But everybody wants to change quickly. And I would say that one of the worst things that slows people down is the calendar watching. That's huge. You know, they'll say to me, hey, I'm not watching the calendar, but it's been 3 months already, damn it. And so they know that it's been 3 months and they know that it's been 6 months, you know, and so they're watching the days go by trying to heal. I think that's the top worst thing is trying to heal, because that's playing right into the teeth of it. It's trying to get you distracted. And by doing that, you're still distracted from what's going on. And so the best thing is to go out and find something that you love with a passion in your life. And most of the people aren't working or in between jobs or things like that, too. And that's why I mentioned Elaine Aron's work and the highly sensitive person. She said the hottest topic in her seminars was career. As soon as she would bring it up to these people, because they're all stuck in career limbo, their hands would all go up, everybody in the room. Getting matched up with the right career and passion in your life. And I will say, almost all these people will say, I don't know what to do. I'm stuck. I don't know where I want to go with my life. I don't know what to do. And that causes TMS. It angers us. It angers us, you know. But there's a lot of other factors, too. There's the fear. Aging is such a big trigger. It's huge, you know. People pushing 40 and 50 and 60 and 70 and 80, they're naturally angry. I remember Dr. Sarno saying, I'm angry that I'm getting old, too. But he was 90, you know, and he's still going well. Which is great to know that the person who started this big movement is living to be a very old person. That should bring some sense of relief to people too. But there's so many factors involved in it, you know. But it's that doubt, you know, that doubt that creeps in. I don't know if I have it. I've had several people recently tell me, you know, I was diagnosed by a TMS physician with TMS, and they went and had a surgery right after it.
So I'm very curious. Now, when you talk about, you've talked about people being kind of in the interstitial area of their life between one thing and another, and you're talking about purpose and helping people, and they seem like such powerful ideas. But I can also imagine some people who they try to help other people, and rather than soothing them, and we know that that's so important, soothing your stress, it makes them more tense. So what's the right way to look for purpose in your life so that it adds to your life and soothes rather than enrages?
Wow, you could probably write a book on that, huh?
You're the one to do it. Maybe your next one.
But I tell you, I guess if you can be 110 years old right now in your mind and look back on your life, what do you want it to have stood for? You know, what do you want to leave behind? Look what Dr. Sarno's left behind, you know? But he still had TMS, you know, but in the later years, it got better and better. But what is it do you want to stand for? And I think
it's a lot of it has to do with, you know, not pressuring yourself, like taking energy from it, but not.
Right.
I think
well,
you
when
were
you
talking
find your
before
true
about
passion,
beating yourself up.
Yeah, when you find your true passion, you've worked your last day of your life. I mean, it's fun. Your energy is boundless. You know, it's endless. You know, and there's so much energy goes into holding these emotions in the TMS. Because I've always looked at the pain itself as an energy force. You know, it needs dissipated. It's a directionless force. It's stuck in your hands or your feet or your back or your neck. It's a directionless force because the person doesn't know which direction to go. And they're using all this energy, and they fall into chronic fatigue a lot of times. They're suppressing these emotions for so many years. But if they can find that purpose, it frees them suddenly. And all of their energy goes into purpose and away from body.
That's what you notice about all the big boys. Michelangelo, William Blake, William Butler Yeats, Thomas Hardy. They were creating right up to the last minute.
Right, right.
They were on fire.
Thomas Jefferson, too, and Isaac Newton was like 83, twice the age that normal people lived back then. They created, you know, and creativity is an expression of ourselves. Of course, the pain and the symptoms are the body expressing itself through the body, because the person never learned how to do it verbally. They were never allowed as children, you know, to show anger. It's bad to show anger, you know, or Dr. Sarno used to use the phrase, children should be seen and not heard, you know, from 1905 when he was a child. But the concept is the same. The kids are always told to shut up and, you know, get in line. And so they pretty much never learn how to express themselves. So as adults, when they get stressed out or there's a severe separation anxiety, like somebody's sick or they lost somebody in their family, they don't know how to express themselves then either. And so their body does it through the symptom. And you got to get it to express itself in a better way. That's why I brought up that work about George Grotek. He was the most fascinating person I ran across in the research. And he called it the it, some type of outside force that's expressing itself through you. And he said once he could try to get that force to try to not do that to the person, you can learn without punishing the person. These people began to heal at astronomical rates. He was actually one of the greatest healers of all time. And no one's ever heard of him because he didn't care about anybody knowing about him. He wasn't into fame or anything like that. But it was a phenomenal person. But yeah, creativity is a big one. It really is, you know. And this is how people show their express themselves through dancing and through painting and through music and writing, things like that, you know. And sometimes they'll express themselves through violence because the separation anxiety is so great. The only thing they have is panic, and when they have panic, they go into a burst of rage and they just start hurting people, you know. And so it does all come back to separation anxiety, without a doubt. But, you know, once again, you know, I try to get people. They say, "Well, what do I do?" I can't remember a interview I ever did on the radio where the host would say, "What do we do?" Okay, we'll accept the fact that this wacky thing you're talking about is true. So, but what do we do? You know, well, that's the million-dollar question. What do you do? And it, to me, it's a life thing, a spiritual thing, mind, body, spirit. It's more than just TMS healing. But some people just read and they start thinking differently and they begin to heal. But I think it depends on your level of debilitation, of course. I don't know anybody that was in a wheelchair and couldn't walk and just suddenly read a book and jumped up singing hallelujah. You know, but the deeper the separation anxiety, the less connected they are, the worse the pain seems to be. And it is about isolation. I would say that just about everyone I've talked to over the last 10 years, it's a problem of loneliness. I can see it. They're just not connected to people, you know, and they're angry. We are not meant to be alone in this world. People have worse health problems when they're isolated. I started talking to gurus in the East, and they kept saying, "You people all suffer in the West because you're all isolated. Over there, you know, on the other side of the ocean, they'll have family get-togethers, and they love each other, and they hold each other. When one person's in trouble, they all gather around to take care of them." There's a lot of isolation here with these families and these people that I talk to, you know, and there's a lot of bickering and tension, and Yeah, it's a mind thing. It's a life thing. I like to tell people it's not about healing your body. It's about healing your life. It really is. You've got to heal your life, you know. I see someone nodding his head over there in the corner.
Hey, Herbie.
That's the new
so body. when it comes to healing your life, I'm trying to think. So what are the, in terms of the takeaways that people can say, okay, I want to heal my life. What should people start doing to heal their life? Like, how do they approach that? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you're asking questions like, why don't you just ask me to define God right now?
I know. It's really tough. Yeah, I know. It's my job is to make it simple. Yeah. And it can't be made simple, but give it a try anyway.
So how do we all become happy, Steve? Yeah. And by the way, we got 15 minutes, Steve. How do we become happy? Wow, that's tough. You know, a lot of people have sat there and said to me, Steve, how do I forgive this person that hurt me, you know? And, you know, Dr. Sarno had a lot of great success at the end of his career because he had it down like a finely oiled machine. He had the whole system down with his psychologist, you know, and he found out that a lot of those people were suffering from pain because they were angry at the people that died, their loved ones who died. They were actually angry at them, you know. And so it's these deep losses, you know, letting go of these attachments. You know, we listen to the Buddhists talk about it, you know, if you just, it's the attachments. It's the want. It's the want of things. And I, you know, I always tell people, well, tension comes from the difference between what we want versus what we just got. There's that difference in between there is the tension. We get stressed, we get tense because we don't get everything we want. Everyone's not agreeing with us. Everyone's not praising us. Somebody died on us, you know, and the person needs to know when that person dies, they're actually angry at that person, you know, and when you get divorced, you're angry at that person for leaving you. Because of that child inside of us, you know, that shadow, that immature part of it, it just needs loved. It just wants to be loved unconditionally. It doesn't want to have to prove itself through perfectionism, which was a word that really clicked home with me when I read Healing Back Pain. I said, wow, perfectionism, yeah. Why do we want to be perfectionists? Why do we need to feel like we should never fail? It's because we're trying to win love, you know. We're trying, if we can never do anything wrong, they're going to accept us. But guess what? It doesn't work that way. We actually, as human beings, we love people that fail, that are genuine people. You know, we fall in love with these celebrities and stuff when they have problems. You know, it's like, wow, they're like me. You know, they're like me. Perfectionism is unattainable. And it's really unrealistic. And it's just punishing yourself. That's all it does. You don't really get much more respect out of people. By being that, you get more respect out of being yourself. As a matter of fact, if you look at any survey that's ever been taken in probably the last 50 years, and you ask people, what's the most attractive thing about people? It's always confidence. People will always say that, the person's confidence, because people don't have confidence, you know, and they would love to have that. You know, and even though people say, why you sound so confident, Steve, I'm not really that confident either. You know, I'm confident that what I'm talking about is true. You know, but I have a lot of things in my life that I'm not that confident about. But it's growing. You know, as the person grows, the confidence grows. And we just love, we're drawn to people who are confident. You know, I'm not talking about arrogance, you know, or pretentiousness, of course. I'm talking about confidence. And because confidence alludes to the fact that, you know, the person is right on the right path. You know, follow me, you know, follow me. I'm on the right path. And so, yeah, so I end up doing consultations like this. It's talking about life, the person's life. And sometimes they'll cry, you know, and sometimes they'll laugh, you know, and it's about bringing that out. And I'll often say to them, what's your pain feel like now? And sometimes it's gone while I'm talking to them. Sometimes it's increasing because we're sticking a stick in the bee's hive and we're stirring up all the hornets, you know. And sometimes it shifts from shoulder to foot to hand while we're talking. Because it is an emotional process. The body heals itself within a relatively short period of time. If it doesn't, something's driving it. And that thing is emotions. But anyway, it's so fun, you know, especially people who actually. But maybe you should get some questions in so the people might want to go to bed. I don't know how tired they are.
I think that sounds like a terrific idea. So anyone out there, if you've got a question for Steve-O, now would be a good time to speak up. Even if you've brought up the question earlier before we started the recording, why don't you dive on in?
I have a question.
Shoot.
haven't read anything on concussions yet. My daughter's had a concussion for over a year. If it's true that it was initially swelling in the brain or whatever, you would think that would go away after a certain period of time. And at a year, at 1 year after the injury, you're just re-experiencing learned responses to exercising or some, you know, the pain. You're just re-experiencing it. Do you know anything about concussions? Have you heard anything?
I think she even answered her own question there probably too, but I know I had a concussion once and knocked out in a football game. But concussion, of course, is a real injury. You know, that's not TMS. I think she's wondering whether what I called phase two TMS, where it piggybacks at the end of an injury as it's healing. I think that's what she meant. Yeah. And I have not. I'm sure the TMS physicians have. But if it's gone on for a year, I would definitely look at an emotional process. And like she just said, even the thinking process, you know. If the person, did she say it was a daughter? Is that what she said?
Yes, it's my daughter.
That person, the daughter may be anticipating it every day, using it to hide her anxiety within. Because, you know, if she's in school, school's always anxious-ridden for kids, all kids. They all hate going because they're afraid of getting criticized and rejected or making a fool of themselves, you know. It's very tense times. But she could be just in that loop, exactly, you know, hiding her anxiety within the injury. I call that phase two. Yeah. I think phase four is the most common one, I think, which is afterwards. But, the best thing to do is contact one of the TMS physicians, of course.
Well, we're in Canada. I don't know if there's where
the... You can email them. I'll tell you what. Oh, I got good news, too. I should have said that. Dr. Sofer is now back to talking to people again. He's doing pretty well. I would send, whoever that was, send an email to Dr. Sofer and ask him about that.
Okay.
He usually does it for free. He charges to consult with people, but he'll answer simple questions for free.
That's excellent. Thank you.
And I think it's probably on the wiki. Is MD Sofer MD? I think it's on there, right?
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
We have a list of TMS doctors and therapists, and you can get the email from there. You can certainly get to his website, which has the email on it. Thank you so much for your question, Peggy. Who else has a question? Anyone else want to jump on in?
I have a question.
Okay, let's go to the male voice first. I heard that. Oh, by the way, a little bit of technical background, because this is a teleconference. There'll be about a 500 millisecond delay, which can cause it. We interrupt each other inadvertently, and it's not because we're rude. It's because that's the way the teleconferences work. The second thing is that since we're talking about a diagnosis, it's a good time to reinforce the idea, which I think all of you know, but always bears repeating, that no one on the phone, at least that I'm aware of, is a doctor, and certainly no one is acting as a doctor on the phone. If you have a medical concern, it is always very important. You know, Dr. Sarno will say this, Steve reinforces it. You're crazy if you don't go see a doctor to rule out something serious. That always is something you want to do, and this can't be a substitute for medical advice.
Good point. When I give out TMS advice, I'm assuming they have TMS.
Exactly. So there was a male voice who was starting to ask a question. Why don't you continue?
Yeah, hi, this is Storm Shadow. I've been on the forums for maybe about a month or two now and just discovered TMS in February.
I've always wanted to meet a ninja. Let me just say that as someone who
grew up with G.I. Joe. My question is, in your opinion, are all RSIs, repetitive stress injuries, talking about being the exception, I guess, would you consider all of them to be TMS? Because I've had a host of symptoms, back, jaw, neck, leg. They all started happening in sequence, I guess, last July. And for whatever reason, my arms, wrists, and hands, just they're my passion. I use them for work. I use them for playing games, video games, and recreational activities, and I guess for whatever reason, that's the one symptom that doesn't seem to move around, and it varies in intensity and stuff like that. So it's much easier for me to assume everything else is TMS, but still hold on to what some of the doctors are telling me, that oh, it's from overuse, you're on a keyboard all day, you're playing video games at night, you know, you're using your arms 9 hours a day. And I think especially when it comes to numbness and tingling, that kind of freaks me out. So yeah, I guess that was just...
Yeah. Where are you located?
I'm in New Jersey, and actually I should say that I've seen a TMS doctor, Dr. Gloss, who's given me the diagnosis of TMS, and seeing Dr. Chan from a psychotherapy perspective. Both of them seem great. I've been seeing them for about a month now, and I am on a daily basis more and more accepting the diagnosis, but for whatever reason, when it comes to the arms, it's much tougher.
Well, you did good. He's the best out there, I think, right now. You know, he's fantastic, and I heard good things about her. RSI is TMS, you know, then just ask the TMS physicians, all those cases are. You know, that thing is actually something some doctors made up in the early 1970s, you know, they just decided, carpal tunnel, I think it started out that way. You know, let's just call it this, you know, and by labeling it, they give it tangible power over you. You know, and that's what I told Dr. Sarno, that the symptom imperative, I think, was the most brilliant thing he came up with, because it answered all of our health problems. You know, they used to think, wow, this person was sickly because they had a shoulder problem. The poor guy's got a neck problem now. Now the poor guy's got to have foot surgery. He didn't have different problems. He only had one problem, just one, unconscious emotions, you know, anxiety. And the things that he just named, of course, those are all TMS hallmarks. He went through the checklist. And so there's no doubt that RSI is TMS, especially since you've been checked out medically. But the thing is, with the brain is very sharp, you know, it'll take a TMS and somebody may heal pretty quickly from it, like a shoulder pain where they can't raise their arm up. And then it'll switch into their hands or their feet. But this time it will alter the feeling a little bit. It'll just tweak it to make it feel really structural this time. It's that sharp. It doesn't want to give you the same type of sensation because you're not going to be fearful of it. The whole idea is to create fear and panic and to rivet your mind to your body. And it's found it in you, in your hands. It's found a place where you have a little bit of doubt. Now that's going to stay right there. The symptom imperative shift has stopped. It won't go anymore until you begin to reject the diagnosis of using your hands too much. That's crazy. You know, those doctors, that's why the subtitle of my book is Faulty Medical Advice is Making Us Worse. The doctor's telling you you're using your hands too much, isn't that? That's crazy talk. You know, we're strong. Our human bodies are very strong. They can take a lot. Actually, for 30 years, I thought I had a weak back. You know, doctors were telling me, well, if you step off a curb, you know, you can rupture a disc and paralyze yourself. If you pick up a pencil, you might be able to just rupture a disc there, you know? So I went around my whole life thinking I had a glass back, you know, that was fragile. And when Dr. Sarno was the first one I ever heard to say, the spine is strong as hell, you know, it can take all kinds of things. And so that's the first time I'd ever heard that from a physician. And so, I would keep working with Chan, you know, and it's definitely TMS. You know, if you need a boost of confidence, you just have to look at the stories, and Forrest is a good example. I think he had similar types of symptoms.
I did indeed. I had all sorts of repetitive strain injuries for 18 years. Yep.
I have a question. I have a question, please.
Oh, I think that there was a female who was coming in after Storm Shadow.
Oh, that's me.
Okay, shoot.
I don't mind if he wants to go first. It's fine.
Okay, that sounds good. So the gentleman will go first, and then Rose will go after.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Steve about spinal stenosis. I had a very bad case of spinal stenosis, and I read your book, and I read Dr. Sarno's book. And I would say that worrying about it just got worse and worse. And once I finally gave up and quit worrying about it, I would say about 6 months to 9 months later, all my pain has gone away. But I guess my question would be, percentage of spinal stenosis is TMS? Is all of spinal stenosis TMS?
You know, stenosis is a condition where the space between the discs narrows, and I have severe stenosis. I mean, it looks like you can't get a sheet of paper between there. And the first time that didn't cause pain was when Dr. Sarno said in Healing Back Pain, and I've seen a lot of people with spinal stenosis. That's a very common thing because it just gets narrow as we age. And so it definitely, you know, has nothing to do with TMS. that's the correlation or association errors that people run into, that they see something on the imaging and they try to correlate it. But those are called spurious correlations. Spurious means false. And in every spurious correlation, it's usually a third factor that it's unknown to the observer. And so we have pain, we go in, we get imaging, and they look at the spine and they go, look, there's arthritis, because I've got arthritis. I've got severe stenosis. I have herniated discs at L3, L4, L5, and S1. And I have degeneration, which is water loss. And I have a lot of osteophytes, which are bone spurs. And on my imaging, it looks as though the bone spur is pinching the nerve coming out of the spine. It looks like it's grabbed it and it's leaving no escape for it to travel. And yet the pain still went away. So Sarno is exactly right. You know, those things are incidental findings. They do not cause the pain. And so that was probably the toughest thing for me to erase from my guided image was the stenosis. I remember as I was running and lifting, kept thinking about those x-rays and MRIs, but eventually it went away. Besides, like he said, you know, if it was pinching a nerve, the nerve would die. And then the dead nerve would not transmit pain signals anymore. It couldn't there wouldn't be any pain if it was pinching it. So there is no such thing as pinching of nerves. It's actually a sucking sensation, like the as the blood flow is reduced, the nerve's not getting any oxygen. It's really it's a different type of sensation. And I began to see it as that and to feel it as that. And well, it worked. It worked. So hopefully that answered his question.
Yeah, thank you.
Is it okay if I ask, or
is that Miffy? Hello?
Yeah, hi.
Go ahead.
I don't want to cut in front of anyone though.
It's okay. Go ahead.
Hi, Steve. It's Miffy Bunny. You probably already know that I'm struggling with. I'm having a very hard time with RSD. It's called reflex sympathetic dystrophy, and I really believe it's probably the most extreme manifestation of TMS. My MRI showed like bone marrow edema in all my toes. I still have like a swollen big toe. It's been like 10 months. And I have strange color changes in my feet because I get vascular spasms, and I guess the blood flow is weird because sometimes my feet are red, sometimes they're purple, sometimes they're white. And then I have horrendous neuropathic burning pain and stabbing knife-like pain. So I'm having a really hard time because there are just so few examples anywhere or testimonials of people within the TMS umbrella that recovered from RSD. Forrest sent me a clip, which was helpful, but I don't know. I feel exceptionally freakish and you know, like one of those people. And like I said, I did overcome TMS in the past, so I think I have some street cred, but I can't seem to, like, this is just seems bigger than me. I don't know.
It did, but what I just was telling the other person to you,
mm-hmm,
Once you heal it, your brain will actually alter it to another form,
right?
To make you think, oh, this one, this time, this is not TMS. This is really, but it is still TMS, you know. And I remember, I don't know if it was last year, I think, when I talked to Dr. Sofer, and he goes, I've healed about six of those people with RSD. You know, it's TMS, he told me. You know, I'm sure there's more severe forms of TMS. There's probably more severe forms of RSD, of course. Any symptom can have, you know, a range of intensity or magnitude. But not being a doctor, you know, I'm not a doctor, but the doctor's telling me that it's TMS and that they can heal them. So
right.
I would, if I was you, I would approach it from that aspect. You know, I'm sure you've been checked out for any other things, but if you treat it like TMS, you know, and treat it just like a form of TMS that's really just grabbed you by the horn this time.
Yeah, it's crazy, and I can't. My mind could have never even conjured this pain. It's a neuropathic pain it's indescribable, and it's like you have, you know, your blood vessels are, you know, on fire.
Right. You know, get a hold of Mark Sofer.
Right. Okay.
Just throw that question to him, and that'll give you a boost of confidence, I think, you know.
Yeah, my confidence is definitely shaky, and I must say I have made progress. Like, I was using a wheelchair in November, and so I'm now getting around. I'm wearing ugly Croc shoes, which is also very depressing to me. And the pain does not move around. It's always in the same spots.
Mine never moved really either. For 30 years, mine stayed in the same spot, you know. And I was talking to Forrest earlier, you know, people were talking about the trigger points, the tender points.
Right, right.
I never had those either. So you don't have to have those to have TMS.
Okay. Yeah.
But you know, you've got to definitely have the TMS personality. It's very quiet. You know, you probably want to scream and yell. I'm sure there's things going on in your life. I think I remember a little bit of it, but
yeah, my son with autism. Yeah, I have a lot of daily chronic stress.
Right, and you know, if you understand the concept of the divided mind, which was a brilliant concept of his, you know, that part of you doesn't want to be there. It doesn't even want to be in that situation. There's one reason that I think people are having trouble healing too. They don't understand the concept of the divided mind. They truly see themselves as just good people who only think good things and are only nice. You know, that's repression at its highest. You know, we all have a bad side. We all have a shadow. You know, Jung said we all carry a shadow. And he said the less it is embodied in our daily life, the blacker and denser it becomes. So your TMS will actually get worse if you think that you're just nice all the time, you know, and I never get angry and all these things. You have to recognize the fact that Dr. Sarno used a lot of examples. Remember the mother who, you know, says she doesn't realize that even though she loves her children, that she's angry at them at the same time, you know. And so
I think I have pretty good emotional awareness. I mean, I'm pretty honest about how much I hate my life. I think I'm really honest. I'm pretty brutally honest.
Well, you might not realize the magnitude, you know.
I realized.
Well, I mean, if you did, let's put it this way. If you did know its magnitude, you wouldn't have the symptoms.
Okay, you know? Maybe it's even worse than I...
Yeah, there. It's pushed into the body, you know, all of the frustration and resentment and sorrow and all those things. There's four big emotions I like to talk about: that resentment and sadness and anger and fear. I think those are the big four. All those things. If you could feel it, you wouldn't have the symptoms. That would be unnecessary. But since they're, like Dr. Sarno said, they're either too powerful, too sad, or too threatening. And so they must be repressed, and they must be covered over and kept in check with the symptoms themselves, you know. And so you don't sense how angry and sad and frustrated you are. You know, you sense the tip of the iceberg. Uh-huh. And of course, I would, if I was you, you know, it's very healthy. I would go talk to somebody, you know, somebody who's really good, like this Alan Gordon guy, you know. I think he's really good. I don't know, Forrest, if he does Skyping or...
He does indeed do Skyping.
He's hard to get into now because he's having so much success.
He is indeed, but he runs his own pain psychology center. He's got a bunch of interns that he's kind of hand-selected from his teaching at USC and other places. And
I suggest him because
the same method.
Because it helps to have someone knowledgeable with TMS, you know, the mind-body syndrome. It's nice. I remember Dr. Sarno saying, you know, that his psychologist would sometimes call him back and say, Dr. Sarno, your patient is wandering. You know, the patients go down there and they lie on the couch of the psychologist and they start talking about their childhood, you know, and that's not what he wanted. He said, you know, it's very nice that you talk about your childhood. It's probably healthy that once in a while you talk about growing up, but that's not the purpose of TMS therapy. It's to connect the emotions to the symptoms. The people are missing the point. So he would call them back up from psychology and say, listen, we're trying to narrow down on this in a specific way. We're trying to feel these emotions, you know, and to change your thought process and try to dissolve it that way through the deeper brain. And then he would send them back down and they would jump on it that way. So it does help to not just go talk to anybody randomly.
Right.
But somebody good. And I know Dr. Chan, I've heard really good things, but expensive. They're expensive, you know. It's like anything, you know, the better they are, the higher the rates are. And it's just sad part of life. But and yeah. I don't think insurance covers a lot of that therapies, but I don't know much about it, I suppose.
I think it's harder for me this time because I did conquer it in the past, so it's kind of super frustrating to me because I felt so invincible and I felt like so empowered. I was really confident, and
right. when well, you heard two people before you say the same thing. It went easy the first time. And I would say this, I was telling Forrest earlier, a lot of people over this last year that I was doing consulting with said the same thing. When I first went to see Dr. Sarno, I had no trouble at all. My pain disappeared. They go by, 10 years goes by, 15 years goes by, 20 years goes by, and bam, they've got a new type of symptom that feels like it's not TMS this time, and then they're really frustrated, they tell me. You know, I got rid of it in like 3 months before, and this one's hanging on. But that's the brain being very smart. It's actually shifting it to a way that this time can firmly convince you that something's wrong. It's just that it's, you know, if it's TMS again, and I'm not a medical doctor, I can't diagnose it, but if it's TMS again, your brain is done just like it's done to everyone else. It's shifted it and made it something that feels a little different. It's tweaked it. Yeah, because the whole idea is to put doubt in your mind. The more you doubt that your body is okay, then the emotions, the full brunt of the emotions can remain hidden.
Right.
Very, very elegant theory of his that's been proven to be true. And the tough part is, I know what you mean. You know, we like examples from people, but I know Dr. Gwatz has been one of the ones that has said, you know, why do you want more examples? Because you're not going to believe that either. At some point, you have to accept that you have TMS. You know, you have to accept it. And if he said, if I show you one, you'll say, you got another? Do you got another? Because that in itself is TMSing. It's putting off the painful emotional work.
Right,
you know,
right.
If you can keep researching and you can keep reading, and people keep reading the books over and over and over, they're not ever jumping to pillar number two. He said in Healing Back Pain, you know, there's two pillars. The first pillar is the gathering of the information into the nature of the disorder. And the second pillar was acting on that. Very few people that contact me actually act on it, you know. And the acting on it is the things that I was talking about earlier, the life stuff, the purpose, you know, and the passion and the self-introspection and the things like that. You know, forgiveness, that's huge, forgiving yourself, you know. Sometimes when things happen to people we love, we blame ourselves. Well, actually, Dr. McKenzie said, who doesn't blame themselves? You know, everybody blames themselves, especially this type of personality. You can be saying, you know, I'm blaming myself for something that happened. But you have to forgive yourself at some point. You have to forgive yourself. It's not your fault. You know, I always like to use that, you know, that movie Good Will Hunting. Remember that scene?
Yeah.
That great scene where Robin Williams was telling him, it's not your fault, Will. He was going, don't do this to me. Don't do this to me. It's not your fault, Will. He finally pushed him into the corner. It's not your fault. And he started crying. Remember?
Yeah.
That great catharsis. That's true. It's not your fault. What happened in your life, you know?
Yeah.
It's not your fault. And so maybe, so my point there is you got to go see Robin Williams.
Yeah.
So contact Dr. Sofer.
Okay.
Tell him I told you to. I don't know if that pulls any weight or not. He may not answer your email, so be careful.
Okay. Well, that's thank you for the suggestion. And I really appreciate your, you know, I consider you to be such a wise person on this subject, so I really appreciate it.
Would you tell my parents that?
Sure.
All parents think all their kids are dumb.
Don't even know your wife.
Yeah, well, contact me if you have any questions, you know, but he's pretty nice about that, you know, and just tell him you had a quick talk. And I mentioned that he had some cases of RSD and you just needed a little boost of confidence from a medical standpoint.
Okay. Yeah, that's probably, thank you so much. Because I do believe in TMS and I completely understand it. And so it's strange. I guess I'm lacking confidence.
Right. Well, tell him that you had it before and defeated. That's a big indicator for the TMS physicians that it's TMS again if you had it one time before.
Right. Yeah, this time's a doozy. I mean, my brain must be really powerful to do this to me.
Well, you're hiding some very painful stuff to your heart. You're protecting your heart. You know, yeah, you're protecting. You know, and you've got to somehow work through it. It's tough. These people were very courageous people. They really are. You know, I've met a ton of them, and people tell me too. You know, I read your book, man. You're really courageous. I never thought of it that way. You know. I was just like drowning, you know, and you're just flailing away with your arms and legs trying to stay above water. And people think that's courageous, you know, but for me, I was just doing everything that I could to survive. But the first time I heard that word courageous was when Dr. Sofer wrote the foreword for my book. And I read it. He sent it to me. He goes, feel free to do with this whatever you want. You know, it's your prerogative. And at the end of it, he said, it took great courage. I thought, wow, I did it really? You know, because all I was doing was trying to survive.
But, exactly. I mean, that's how I feel. I feel like I have no other option. I have to survive every day. It's not, I don't, because people will say, oh, you're so strong. And I'm like, what option do I have? You know, I'm a mom and I just don't have many, you know.
I said that earlier too, you know, you probably feel alone in your situation. There's no one to talk to in the similar situation. Yeah. And isolation makes it worse, you know, and, I don't know.
Yeah,
I hate to send you to support groups because I'm always telling people don't go to them. That's why he quit having his TMS follow-up lectures. Yeah, at some point, he realized they were sitting around talking about symptoms again, and it was detrimental one more time. And Andrew Weil says it all the time: do not go to pain support groups because that reinforces it as a guided image in your mind. You know, so.
It becomes toxic. It's
very, very toxic, poisonous to the system. Good point.
Right. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Perhaps Rose?
Yeah, hi. I'm also a client of Dr. Gwatz's. I love him. He's awesome. If anybody needs in New Jersey, Dr. Gwatz is just awesome.
Yeah. How do you spell that? Where in New Jersey is he?
Somerset,
okay.
He is a phenomenal man, not just a great doctor. He is a great human being.
He is. He's so kind. I can't even begin to tell you. He spends a lot of time with you. He's just wonderful.
I definitely would throw in my two cents with that. I've had great experience with him. And Rose, I know we've talked in the past. You know, and he does take a lot of time. I think my initial consult with him was like an hour and a half. I mean, he doesn't rush you out. He tries to understand what's going on in your life. So,
How do you spell his last name?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Gwozdz.
Yeah, that's it.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
Just like it sounds. Yeah, I asked him if anyone ever got TMS from trying to pronounce his name, you know. The tongue TMS.
My question is, my symptoms, like, they are going wild. They keep changing around. I mean, when one symptom gets under control, another very weird symptom comes up. Like I can't lift my right arm, like, above my head. And there's not any pain. I had Dr. Gwatz check it out. He definitely felt it was TMS. But when you get so many symptoms, like the symptoms keep changing and changing and changing, and you are doing the action, like I do see a TMS therapist and I'm journaling. I'm trying, every time the symptom changes, I'm getting wiser, I think, because I'm not getting into fear. I was getting into fear before when the symptom would change. And Herbie really has helped me with this. So I'm not getting into fear, but it does get a little mind-boggling, and I keep, you know, reinforcing I'm safe, I'm getting better and better. And but right now, like, my muscles are so tight in my legs. I don't have so much pain, but my muscles get so tight in my legs, I can barely walk.
Oh, I used to have that. I had that. Yes, I would have severe leg spasms in my legs, and they would feel like they were buckling, and I could barely walk. I was taking like 8 Ultrams a day. I had got an ulcer from Advil because I was taking so much Advil, and it was totally TMS. It was completely gone after 4 months, and I was doing yoga, and It's PMS. I thought I was the only one who ever had that, but no, I definitely relate. Really... Yeah.
I definitely believe it's TMS. I wanted to ask Steve. Yeah, thank you for sharing that encouragement.
Yeah,
I do believe it's TMS. The only thing is that when you're going through that, like, you want to, like, enjoy life, but I mean, I could barely, you know, I can't really walk so much now. Like, today I went to the park and I took a walker with me. Because Dr. Block said, just use a, you know, he said, I mean, he probably wouldn't say this normally, but he told me just to give me more movement because I love to exercise. And is there anything to do to get around when the symptoms keep changing so much? Because I think the brain is it because, Steve, the brain is onto you and knows you're onto it, so it just tries to keep changing?
Yeah, I mean, if you're trying to stay active, the brain doesn't like that. TMS wants to keep you down. And if you're trying to stay active, it will just keep bounding around. And of course, you know, Dr. Sarno said, you know, if it bounds around and you keep chasing it like mercury, it's time to talk to a good counselor, you know. And there's a reason that it's there. Something's trying to come out. You know, those symptoms are holding something in, you know. And it's usually, like I said, loneliness. Even with people in our lives, we can be lonely. We can feel alone. Even surrounded by people. But there's also aging is a big thing. When people hit certain milestone ages, they get a lot angrier than they think. They don't feel the full magnitude of it. You know, when they hit those milestone ages, wow. People get a hold of me. I turned 50 or 60 or 70 last night. I'm in hospital. You know, I can't move. But I don't feel like my aging's bothering me. Well, that's the thing. If you don't feel it, if you felt it, you would not have the TMS. It's the emotions that you are not feeling. And that was the final piece of the puzzle for me, the very final piece. When that videotape said, a Dr. Sarno's came out and he said, you know, the anger that you feel has nothing to do with the symptoms. That's the first time I'd ever heard him say that, you know, because I knew I was angry. You know, my wife had been handicapped, but it's the ones that I wasn't feeling. You know, that was the final piece of the puzzle. From that point on, I didn't need to learn anything more about TMS. I needed to put the books away and go live my life without fear. And that's another big point. Once you understand TMS, and most of these people are pretty good at it, you know, they need to stop gathering the information and start just go live. You know, go live your life without fear that something's wrong with your body. You know, but they kind of get stuck on that pillar number one. And they can't jump over to number two. And that is a frightening thing. And, of course, that's one of the reasons that people don't hear heal, too, is the fear of change. You know, if loneliness is the center of it, which I'm seeing, then the pain is your only friend. It's there every day. You can count on it. It's the only friend you can count on is your pain. And so sometimes people are afraid to give it up. You give it up because I think they the deeper aspects of the brain know that what it's hiding, you know, it's there for purposes to do you that favor, like he said. And so why would you want to feel these horrendous emotions? Why would you want to? And so people are reluctant to give it up. So it takes a lot of courage to heal. It really does. You have to be ready. Your heart has to be ready to heal. Mine was ready. At one point, you know, I just said, this is it. This is no life for me. I can't go on living like this anymore. I'm going to go for it. And remember that Nike commercial is the thing that kicked me in gear. Just do it. You know, I remember I was sweating and the room was distorting and I had lost 54 pounds and I was crawling on my hands and knees and it came on the TV. Just do it. And I thought, yeah, what the hell? This isn't living. Why don't I just try it, you know? So you got to be ready to heal. You know, and people say, why am I not healing? I say, well, you're not ready yet. You know, you're not ready yet. You're there. You want to. You kind of want to. But all this fear is being held back by this. And if you take the lid off of it by removing the pain, then you're left raw with the raw fear and the raw anxiety and the raw things. And I think depression is one of the biggest, the worst problems. You know, that's loneliness, of course, too. But depression, I think, is the worst than the pain, because depression can pull you down the rabbit hole fast. You know, it grabs you by the throat and it won't let go of you. And that's a lot of the people who are depressed that contact me, too. And so it's instead of feeling this depression, they would rather wake up to their good old friend, the pain again that day, you know, because I would take pain over depression any day, you know, but so yeah, I would talk to somebody, of course. And of course, if you saw Dr. Guatz, that you're way ahead of almost everybody because they're all jealous that they can't get to a TMS physician.
Right. You
know, I never got to one either.
I do see a TMS therapist and, you know, every week, and I work on journaling. I mean, I can't imagine I don't want to heal, but how would you know if you didn't want to heal? I mean, I want to heal. I remember.
I'm not saying you don't want to heal. You're not ready in the sense that emotions are still too powerful. You still need them right now, you know. Ready in the sense that I'm ready to tackle these emotions and to move on, you know, and to jump into life again and to go live with passion again and things like that. You know, consciously, everybody wants to heal. I mean, you know, I've never seen anybody that didn't want to.
I don't want the TMS.
No, nobody wants it. Nobody wants it. But if you know, let's just say this. You know, somebody comes up to you, I'm going to shoot you or I'm going to stab you. Choose your poison. You have to choose something, and you choose pain over actually facing the emotion, you know, facing the anxiety. Anxiety is just unexpressed anger.
How do you suggest facing the emotion?
Oh, you're asking me. If you're talking to one of his therapists, they're way better than me. better than me.
One of the things I find very helpful with this therapist says, and I think it might be helpful for everyone to hear this, is that she always says, respect the process of healing, and that you have to be confident that your brain knows how to heal. She said you have to be confident of that.
Good point. I mentioned confidence earlier, but it is true to respect the process of healing. We need the process of healing. It's a process, you know. People keep saying to me, you know, I keep waiting to wake up tomorrow and have no pain, you know, just suddenly gone. But it's a process because it's a transformation. You're transforming how you view life. I mentioned Bob Scare in my book. He's a pain specialist out in Colorado, and he refers to it as corrupted memory. And that's a good way to look at it, you know. Since childhood, I like to look at it as a prism. A false prism. We screen all of our daily lives through this corrupted memory, through this false prism, and we keep getting the same, engendering the same, you know, transmission of signals and biological results. You have to change that to a new outlook on life, to a new vision, and you have to see yourself as healed, that you believe that you can heal. She, whoever that is, she's right. You know, you have to be able to believe that you can heal. And of course, everyone I talk to, they believe they're the one that won't heal. And that's why they're not healing as fast. They believe they're falling into that small, narrow category of people that is not going to be able to do it. But by doing that, they actually create that exact scenario that they don't want. You know, the law of attraction. I mentioned the law of attraction. You know, if you anticipate it, you're bringing it to you like a magnet. And so don't expect it. And you have to stop monitoring the body. That's another thing people having trouble healing. They're trying to heal. You know, you can't try to heal. You just have to forget about your body. And that's the second statement I started earlier. The first statement he made that connected with me was the one I said before this one, you know, where he said, as long as he is preoccupied with what his body is doing, his symptoms will continue. That one really resonated with me. I knew at that point, I have got to stop paying attention to what my body's doing every day. Just forget about it. Just go live. You know, if I want to go lift weights, go lift weights. If I want to go golfing, go golfing. If I want to go sit at the bar and drink, I'm going. I'm not going to think about my body anymore, you know. You know, and it worked. It worked. But it takes a lot of hard work. It does. But patience, you know. Like the calendar watching, we mentioned that earlier. That's one of the worst things is the calendar watching. You know, I'm not watching the calendar, but it's been 3 months, damn it.
I love that, Steve. And what you said about just get out there and live your life, it's just so powerful. I mean, that and, of course, watching where this unconscious tension, it feels like we have this tiny little porthole that we can use to look at where we create our tension on a day-to-day basis. And it feels like if you get out and you live your life and you pay a little bit of attention to where that unconscious tension is coming from, it just seems like that's so healing.
Yes, yeah. And you can reflect on yourself and you can say, why – do I need to repress? You know, what was it about my life, about myself, that I feel the need to repress so much of what I feel inside, that I'm creating anxiety and anger and all these things? What is it, you know? And it's, I think it's not letting go of attachments, you know. Think people that have left us in our lives, or jobs that we've been fired from, or things like that, you know, we hang on to these things, and because they're part of our lives, and but we have to let go, you know. And in the last chapter of my book, you know, letting go, you know, it's easier said than done, that's for sure. But in the Buddhist tenets, you know, that they'll say that all things are impermanent. It's true, you know. And so it takes great courage, you know. It's ironic, though, isn't it? The greatest strength we can have is to let something go. Mm. That's one of the most difficult things to do. But, and I can say it, I have trouble doing it myself. But I let a hell of a lot more go now in my life than I used to. I had to make sure everything was going. Projects were perfect. Everything was going, working nicely. Now, I don't even think about that stuff when I get up. I put the blinders on and I go do what I want to do that day. If everything else falls apart, then it falls apart. So I
that's
did like
that's wonderful. I keep on thinking about what you said earlier in the talk, or maybe it was earlier this afternoon when we talked beforehand, about how important it is to live an unstructured life. And again, I'm saying it being a TMSer as if it's important. I have to work hard at being unstructured, but of course that is the point. It's like trying really hard to meditate. It's just not going to work. You just have to live life and live in that flow.
Yeah, it's like working really, really hard to relax. You know, really, I'm gonna get it this time. I'm gonna just concentrate as hard as I can. Yeah, it's really weird. The strongest we can ever be in our lives is to relax our bodies and to let life take us on the journey. You know, and to have faith and to believe in things, that things will be better and that they will work out. You know,
I think that is the most pleasurable thing to see on the forum is when someone who is they're trying so hard and they're trying to figure it out. And then you see them at some point, they learn how to relax. And it is totally a beautiful thing to see. Really wonderful.
That Emmett Miller helped me there. I didn't know what relaxation was in my life. I had never relaxed. And when I bought his CD, what was it? It was cassette tape back then. You know, it's all DVD now. But I didn't know that I wasn't relaxed ever. And he took me down level by level by level. And at some point, you start to panic and jump because you're beginning to relax. That's what's called unity consciousness. You're beginning to just settle in and connect with everything around you. I remember some points when I got so relaxed with his voice. He had this really cool voice, you know. And I could hardly tell. I felt like I was connected to the whole room that I was in. I would look at the walls and everything, and I felt at one with everything in that room, you know, and I'd never felt like that before. But, like, I did that interview with him that he put on his website, and we talked about this. If the psychological conflict remains, the relaxation doesn't hold, you know, it doesn't take hold because it just keeps looping again. And so at some point, you need to deal with the conflicts and the tension in your life.
Right. So I imagine after this call, a bunch of people are going to be interested in those CDs. Can you, so is this, you just go to emmettmiller.com or just Google Emmett Miller and then it's, you look for his relaxation.
DrMiller.com.
Okay.
DrMiller.com.
And these are relaxation CDs, correct?
Yeah. He has the most massive healing library in the world. Wonderful. He's got things for every type of thing. He might even have RSD stuff there. I'm not sure.
I'm on Amazon right now looking him up as we speak. It's so funny.
Yeah, he's something. He may have been the first mind-body physician in the United States. He started in the late 60s, I think, and he was calling himself that. And, of course, he was an outcast like Dr. Sarno for calling himself that. But he's had tremendous success, too. And I started telling him about Dr. Sarno. He said, you know, that Sarno guy's right. That's exactly what I'm seeing in my practice. Is they're depressed, they have anxiety, you know, and trauma, and anger. That was an honor to actually get in his library. I never thought that was actually possible, but he put me in there. I don't know if anyone's ever read it.
That is wonderful. So does someone else have a question they want to ask?
I don't have a question.
Let's go with Walt first.
Well, I just wanted to say hello to everybody. I've been in and listening, but I haven't interrupted and asked anything because the questions and the exchange of information is so fascinating.
That is wonderful, Walt.
And, It's just great. Hi. It's great hearing all of you.
Uncle
Steve,
Walt.
You're wonderful.
Well, thank
you're
you.
You're wonderful.
And so are you.
This is Walter Alexi. He is one of the authors of the forthcoming book, God Does Not Want You to Be in Pain. Eric Watson is also on the line. And they, one of the things which they discuss in their book is how they contacted Steve Ozanich, actually, I think, on the TMS Wiki, and he helped them heal. So it's
sure
kind of wonderful.
I just want to add two things about relaxation. I find two of the most helpful things are deep breathing and laughing.
Yeah.
And when I wake up every morning, I say, thank you, Lord, and today is going to be a great day. Everything is going to be just fine.
That's the attitude. We need to bottle his attitude and inject it into other people.
That's what I love about Wally. He's got a great attitude. Okay, but this is the Steve Show, so let's get... There was a female voice we wanted to jump in there.
This is Tiger Lily. I do have a question.
Oh, Tiger Lily. Hi, I'm Walt's here. Good to hear from you.
Hi, Walt. Hope Annie's doing good.
She's wonderful.
Good. My question is, I'm down here in Florida. There are no TMS doctors here in Florida. And so I have 100% embraced the diagnosis of TMS based on the books I've read, based on the chiropractor and an orthopedic surgeon and the MRI report. And so when you guys say go to a doctor and rule out anything serious, kind of a two-part question, is there anything serious? Are we talking like cancer tumors, broken bones to rule out? And have you ever, in your experience, come across anybody whose pain was, in fact, caused by herniated discs?
Well, there's a lot in that statement. Do you know Scott Brady? He's in Florida. Do you know who that is?
I don't know Scott Brady. I know there's somebody in the Orlando area that is a TMS doc, but he does not see patients anymore.
I don't know if Brady, he might have called himself a TMS doc.
I think that is the name of the person, because I did look up, I did contact, trying to, and that name rings a bell.
I think he was in Orlando, too. He doesn't see people anymore.
No.
I didn't know that. I've been sending people there.
I tried.
The other thing was, is I remember I was doing a radio show. Oh, I think it might have been that Second Sight radio show. And I was waiting to come on. I was listening to the guest in front of me. It was a famous football player from the Pittsburgh Steelers. He had written a book about life and, you know, his life. And he had back pain. And I was listening to what he said before I went on, and here he had cancer, and it caused him back pain. So those are the things that you want to roll out when you go. You don't have to see a TMS physician to roll things out, serious things. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole idea is to rule out things like infections, aneurysms, and tumors. Those are the big things. You know, and of course, any neurological thing. You know, I had tons of EMGs done, electromyographies. They rule out weird neurological things. But once you've been cleared generally, then of course you can try TMS healing. But it does help to have a rubber stamp, you know, of TMS approval from a doctor. But I never got one. And I think it took me longer because I didn't have one. There just weren't any back then. There was only a couple books. They were all Dr. Sarno's. And I didn't know anybody. But it takes
time. Howard Stern talked about it, yeah.
Did that answer that? I didn't know if there was another part to that question.
Yeah. Have you ever known anybody who had the pain caused by herniated discs?
No. And I did ask, I think, Dr. Sofer one time, do you ever see anybody who had sciatica and back pain that wasn't TMS? He said no. Mm-hmm. I think Dr. Sarno might have, but he would be very reluctant to say it because everyone would focus on that
sure.
person. You know? And okay. so... He kind of just kept quiet on certain things. I can't speak for Dr. Guatz, but I do know that Dr. Schechter, Hannibal Schechter, he has diagnosed two people that I've met with actual pain from herniated discs, and they've came to me and I worked with them and they healed. They did not have herniated disc problem, but he is very quick to pull the structural, you know, answer on people. He's too quick, actually. And the other TMS physicians know it. And it's not really helping a whole lot. You know, not helping a whole lot. But I don't know. I think Dr. Sarno said, you know, if it's herniated and pinching a nerve, you'd just be paralyzed. You'd be paralyzed. And but the weird part of it was I was paralyzed too. For 9 months, I had to drag my left leg, and I had no feeling or motor function in it, and it was just TMS only. And so it's a tough thing. I know we need more doctors. You know, I would like to ask Dr. Guatz if he wouldn't mind training some people, if they could shadow him.
You know, yeah.
We need more people. I get one of the biggest reasons I get contacted is there anybody in Louisiana or Southern Texas or in Minnesota? You know, and sadly, no.
My husband was ready to rent a minivan, put a mattress in the back so I could lay down and drive me up to New York or somewhere to see a doctor, but I didn't think that that was necessary per se, since we know that I don't have cancer or anything else. And, you know, the pain changes from sharp stabbing one day to tight and yanking on it the next day to leg spasms the next day. And it just, you know, but it's always in the same place.
Right. Well, mine was too, but and then you also have to look at the personality. You know, do you fit the personality, and do you have the childhood makeup of, you know, tension and anxiety, and did you look back at your life and can you see that you had many other TMS equivalents and things like that? They take the whole picture into account before they give you the diagnosis. But it's tough. I mean, it is one of the toughest things, is not to be able to have a TMS physician see you.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say most of the people that I've met never saw a TMS doctor and healed.
Yeah. Well, I think your book with the questions, do I have this? Have I ever had this? Blah, you know, that long list of questions that says, well, then you, my friend, have TMS. And I think that's pretty, you know, that pretty much tells the story. There's no denying it after that. And I do fit that. So I just wanted to ask that. That's always just been nagging in the back of my mind. So thank you. That was helpful.
Yeah, no problem. I've had people contact me, said they read that list and just started crying. They couldn't stop. They went through everything on there. And I've had some weird reactions to people reading the book too. You know, people suddenly lose the ability to concentrate. They haven't been able to read any other books since then. They read a couple paragraphs that connected with them, and they haven't been able to read any other books. And and they said sometimes their pain bounds all the way around in their body while they're reading it. And I didn't expect that either. I expected that they would just look at it and they would just go out and start getting physical again and becoming happy again, you know.
But so we can say Steve-O's book unlocks many mysteries within.
Yeah, and creates many more.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay, the next question that we have is from Mala, and I just unmuted you, Mala. Do you want to give it a try?
Okay, can you hear me?
We sure can.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Hi, Steve, Forrest, Bruce, Herbie. Those are the four people I can see. How are you?
We're doing great.
It's morning time here in Hong Kong, so good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Steve, you just said, go live. I think that's what I'm doing. I may be wrong, but I think I am living, but I find it very hard at times with the pain. How do you forget, or how do you ignore the pain, especially when it's there pretty much all the time? I mean, do you have any little hints or techniques that you use? And were you ever in a situation where you had constant pain?
Yeah, for 30 years.
That was constant all the time?
You know, and of course, it waxed and it waned. Some days it was crippling. Some days it was just nagging, of course. But the whole idea is to shift awareness. And like I was talking about earlier, I don't know if you were here, but I was talking about you shift your awareness from your body to a passion in your life, you know, about going to live. And that's a good point. I use the word deception in the title of my book for three reasons. It was a very, very difficult thing to actually come up with a title, because you want to nail it. You know, you've got to get it perfect as far as search engines and how it ties into everything and the full meaning. But I use the word deception for three reasons. You know, first one, of course, is the brain deceiving you into thinking something's wrong with the body, you know. And the other thing is, of course, all the deceptive things we're being told, you know, about chiropractic and acupuncture and all these things, they're actually keeping us in pain. And the third reason that I use the word deception is because of something called self-deception. Self-deception means that you have convinced yourself that the lie is the truth. And when people tell me, I'm happy, I'm doing really good, and I keep probing deeper and deeper, they'll suddenly start crying and collapse. That's part of the reason of TMS, is to keep you consciously. People will say, oh, my family is good, I'm happy, everything's really good, until you start digging deeper. You know, part of the brain is deceiving you sometimes when you think that you're living like you wanted to. I had a person contact me, said, my life couldn't have gone any better, he told me. He had severe TMS in his neck. And I started talking to him, and he just broke down. His wife just left him. He just lost his job. And something else, major, somebody died that he loved. Three major things had happened, but he had the smile on, the superego smile, saying, everything's going like I want it to go. But that's the purpose of the deceit, you know, the ego, superego. And so, you know, I don't know. You might be living your dream life. I don't know. You might not even know. So there's no way I could tell, of course. But I think we have ourselves convinced that this is what I want to do. You know, sometimes it's not true. I don't know. I wish I had some answers or a beer.
Thanks, Steve. Thank you very much. But living a dream life, yes, we don't know. Well, I think I am, like you said, I could be wrong. But surely we only live the life that we think is we can, given the restraints, the limitations, the circumstances we have. And there's always going to be regrets. I mean, people are always going to say, and this is the point where we're at, you know, so live your life with no regrets. But even if you live a sort of a life without any regrets, there's always going to be regrets, because that's who we are. We're human beings. And unfortunately, to say that you're never going to have any regrets is impossible. And so we all are brought up maybe like I know I have childhood issues with my father being an alcoholic and all that. But, you know, at some stage you say to yourself, I'm going to put this behind me. I need to put it behind me so that I can go on living. And I do the journaling, and I do the digging, and there comes a stage when you feel it's not productive anymore to keep going on.
Yeah, but you're spinning your wheels in the mud. Yeah, at some point.
That's right. So how much do you keep digging till you say, well, okay, now enough is enough, or do you keep doing it? And another question, sorry, very quickly, is that you might know that I've been at this game for a long, long time. I discovered TMS in 2003. I've been at it for a long time, and it started with a back pain and then went to neck pain. And now I've got this recent issue, which is, I've written about it on the forum, which is a urinary issue, but it's not really, because I have fibroids and everything else. So my question is, how much digging do you do before you stop?
Well, that's, of course, individual. You know, it's individual. I didn't dig very hard at all. I just immediately accepted the fact that I have some anxiety and that I'm angry that my life went the way it did at a young age. And there's nothing you can do. You can't change the past. It's gone. And so there's nothing I could do about it other than just keep doing what he said to do, you know. And I'd like to keep it to the fundamentals of what he did. He told me a lot of the people have trouble healing if they pick and choose what they want to of what I've discovered, and that's true. A lot of people say, I believe this of what he said, but I don't believe that of what he said, you know. But if you buy into the notion that your body is reacting to emotions that you're totally unaware of, then I believe, my personal belief is, it's the life, you know, it's the life. You know, we only feel good when we're helping people and when we're adding value to the world. You know, the meaning, I think Dr. Zafarides is the one, he's either working on a book now, a TMS book, or he just did a chapter in one called The Psychology of Meaning. That connects with me deeply, you know. We want to have meaning to our lives. You know, just living and just having food. What's the old Bible saying? You know, man does not live by bread alone, right? Yeah, just having the basic things. Yeah, but having those basic things in your life may not be living a good life. You know, you may want to feel more deeper meaning in your daily life. I don't know.
It's interesting that you bring up Peter Zafarides. That might actually be something that we do for 4 weeks. I've contacted Dr. Zafarides, and he's given us permission to review his book chapter or an article that he wrote. So we might actually be doing that. Anyone listening, watch this space, and we'll let you know if we do Dr. Zafiridis, because meaning is super important. If I can jump in, I have to say that's something I really got from your book, which I thought was really important, Steve, was the notion that you didn't actually do that much journaling. And so one thing I've heard from Dr. Gwozd is, I think one of his patients said that he said, I've known lots of people with really thick journals who are still in pain. And I think that says that, you know, 6 weeks of journaling, 8 weeks of journaling is going to be a wonderful thing for anyone. You know, you can learn so much about yourself. But I think that what really causes the healing is what you're emphasizing here. It's how you live the life. You have to live a life which is tension-free and which is filled with meaning and which is filled with connection. It's about living a good life. And that's why I feel like TMS is a message from our unconscious to change the way that we live.
So, yeah, we're anyway, not.
Thank you for illustrating that.
We're not aligned up with where we want to be. That's how I saw it. My life is not where I want it to be, you know. But it's all a perception, you know. I can look at the same object from two different ways. I can see it as good or bad, you know. It depends on how I want to perceive it. Well, most of these people were all brought up in negative environments as children. And so they screen everything through that corrupted memory that I was talking about, that false prism. And when she mentioned that alcoholism, I forgot about that. You know, a lot of these people had alcoholic parents, mothers or fathers. And that's a very tense environment to grow up in for children. And of course, the parent is also dealing with their own problems. That's why they're drinking so heavily, you know, because they're trying to numb those emotions, you know. Instead of using alcohol to enjoy and celebrate life, they drink to excess to kill those painful emotions, to numb them. And, of course, they have their own deep issues, which they probably got from their parents, on and on. And I said in the book, until the person has the courage to stop that cycle. You know, I made it a point to change the way my kids see life, to see life through better eyes. And they're doing good. I mean, once in a while, they get stressed out in finals. They'll have a migraine or a back pain, of course. It's that emotional barometer that he spoke about, you know, which is so true. It's so true. Anytime we need our pain, it's going to come along and save us. So,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hi, Steve-O. Tennis Tom, can you hear me?
Hey. Yes. He's overdriving the speaker almost.
Tom, yeah.
How are you doing? I'm doing great.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, so there's quite a bit of feedback here. Maybe it's on my end or a Verizon. But when is your audio going to be coming out?
I just started recording again a couple days ago. I got chapter 10 in the can. So I will only have 25 chapters to go.
Okay, because I'm looking forward to driving cross country and popping in on you in Ohio and listening to your tapes while I drive.
That'd be cool. I'd like to meet these people. That would be fun.
And you can come out west sometime, too. Maybe we can do a TMS event at my joint, and we'll have a little TMS roundup here. And I really enjoyed your book. I finished it ahead of schedule, actually, thanks to the TMS wiki, to Forrest and Herbie and MC Bruce. Motivated me, and I even got ahead of few chapters. Every chapter is great, but especially your last chapter really summed it up beautifully. This live life, and I think the biblical precept of if I am not for me, who will be for me? That you have to live your life before you can help anyone else live theirs, or anyone you know will follow in your footsteps and use you as a role model.
Hey, Tom, that means a lot, especially coming from you.
Thank you very much, Steve.
And it's been a real pleasure having you in the group, Tom.
Thank you, Forrest. Thank you very much.
Does everybody go to bed, or is anybody still there?
Oh, we got about 30.
Okay. Is that good?
Yeah, we got about 30.
Well, let me tell you some exciting stuff that's happening real quick.
Please.
I helped some guy who was a marketer, very powerful guy. And he said, you know, can I do you some favors? I said, sure you can, you know. So he got my book to some of his friends that are reading the book now. And I'm hoping that they they find it enlightening. You know, one of them was George Clooney, the actor George Clooney, and he looks like he has TMS. You know, he's had two surgeries and it's moving around, and he's angry at it and everything. And they handed it to him the other day. He looks at the cover. I don't know whether he walked around the corner and threw it in the trash can or not, but he got the book. And another one of his friends was Paula Abdul, the dancer, singer. She was on American Idol, I think.
Yeah.
She has RSD.
Yeah, she has. That's right. And she was on Dr. Oz for that, I remember. It looks like she has TMS. She's reading it now. And
that is wonderful.
Arianna Huffington.
Oh, my goodness.
She's got it now. I don't know whether she'll read it, but she has it. And I was telling Forrest, he's friends with Richard Branson, and they flew to Necker Island, and they took my book with them, and he had a little video of them, of some doctors out there that were talking about it. One of them's name was Mark Hyman. He has a book out called The 10-Day Detox. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of that. He's an 8-time New York Times bestseller, and he's reading it now too. And I just said to all these people, as I signed the inside of the book, if you can help in any way, you know, this guy, Mark Hyman, he's on Katie Couric like once a week. He's a regular. These people are connected, but, you know, I don't know whether they'll buy into it. That's the thing, you know.
Will. It's going to happen, Steve-O. It's starting, or it has been starting, but it's building.
I know, but in our lifetime?
Yeah. Yes. Booyah. Soon. You're going to be on Oprah. Yeah.
I like that attitude. I wish I had his confidence about it, you know.
And they're going to make a screenplay because your story, I think, lends itself to being a movie, and Clooney could be you.
And my ex-wife might want me back at that point. it's interesting. There was a guy in Hollywood that was an editor that read it, and he contacted me last year, and he said, wow, he goes, this is the first time in my life I have an answer. You know, and that's the way I felt too with Dr. Sarno's work. And most people probably have. He had migraines for like 37 years. I said, what can you do, man? What can you do? You're in Hollywood. He goes, well, I'm just in editing, you know, it's up to the other people, producers and stuff. But I don't know. I'm in a lot of magazines right now, and I get a lot of nasty emails from people saying it's all hogwash, you know, and it's crazy. But I tell them the same thing every time. The time that you took to come and criticize me, you could have been healing already. But that's their problem, not my problem. You know, Dr. Sarno was one of the wisest men I've ever met in my life. He told me on the phone, don't waste your time and energy trying to convert people. It doesn't work. And I found that to be true. They have to accept it. You know, and I was one of those people who threw his book across the room. I can still picture the pages flying off the fireplace. And so I know that you can't force someone to believe in something. You know, it has to come to them. And the TMS physicians have to walk a very thin line when they're dealing with their patients, because they'll get up out of their office and start slamming things and swearing and slamming doors. So I try not to convert them. But there's enough people out there that want help, and I'm trying to help them, all the people that I can. As long as that I can, I will try to continue to do it.
Steve-O, do you have openings? Can people call you for Skype or phone consultations? And what do you charge if you want to disclose that?
Yeah, I've been doing it now for well over a year. I've been consulting with people for 10 years, but I just started charging last year. People were enjoying it so much, they were sending me money even though I wasn't asking for it. And then everyone kept saying, you know, you got to charge, you know, because I don't have an income. And so I started charging $100 per session, and it seems to be working out nicely. The sessions go on for at least an hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours, as long as the person feels that they're comfortable and understand it and is ready to move on. I'll hang with them at that point. But it seems to be working out well.
That's very fair. That's more than fair, because usually it's 150 for 50 minutes, and you go away walking that lousier than when you're feeling lousier you came in. And a psychiatrist is like, I think, 240 to 400 an hour, and you get a prescription. But they don't do anything for you, and you will actually heal them,
And I think people should get in before the rates have to start going up, because you won't have any hours in the day. So I'm going to call you pretty soon if you pick up the phone, Sam. I'll email you and tell you I'm calling, and I'll PayPal you the money or something like that. And,
all right. Hey, I need to talk to my manager. Tom needs to be my agent. Rates are going up. I wanted to keep them down so that the people could afford it. You know, so I was asking people if they're not working, like there was a couple of people that weren't working and they were totally broke. I couldn't for somehow let them go. I just did it for free because I didn't want them to just not have the opportunity to heal, you know. But if they're working,
wonderful.
I like to. But mm-hmm. Hey, you know, someday, you know, I'm working at, right now, I'm working at the politics end of it, you know, I'm trying to work these producers and magazines and filmmakers. You know, Michael Galinsky has been very nice to me, you know, very nice. And I can't wait to see what he comes up with here, The Story of Pain.
It's Walt. I recommend a documentary. I mean, I think the subject of TMS would be a fantastic documentary.
That marketer I told you about earlier that set me up with some of these people, he emailed me saying, I think a documentary is in line here. So yeah. I don't know, you know, that would be good. I'm thinking of a video with special effects.
Sure.
I could show the person and the life real quickly. I've already got it in my head, but it takes a lot of money and a lot of time, you know. So yeah. We'll see. You know, one day at a time. But I don't want to leave anybody out there hanging with a question. If anybody has one.
Well, so there were two questions. One is, and it sounds like we have another person speaking up. One is, how long does TMS usually last? That was that early question. And the second one is, what do people do wrong? So let's start with how long does TMS usually last?
I think the question means how long does it take to heal? Or are they saying, because it can last a lifetime if you have TMS pain.
I think that's what they mean, yes.
Yeah, how long does it take to heal? Well, I talk to them many times about that. You know, the physicians see a lot of people. I'm seeing a lot of people now, too. But it's highly variable. That's the way they put it to me. It's highly variable. It all depends on their belief in the diagnosis and their confidence in the diagnosis and the confidence that they can heal. If they have great doubts that they really believe that they have structural problems there and they really doubt they have it, it can go for years and years and years, you know. But the more confident they are, the more they believe in it, and the harder they get down to work, because it does take a lot of work, the faster they heal. From my experience, in the last 12 years, I would say, it takes about 6 months to 2 years, I would say. Dr. Sofer felt that it took about 2 to 6 months on his office. But he and I talked about that, you know. Them seeing him expedited their recovery because he was a doctor. You know, the archetypal influence of him with the white coat is so powerful to the deeper brain. And so seeing me, you know, I'm just the Joe Schmo. They're not getting that rubber stamp of approval.
The MD is important.
Yeah, it's very important. Yeah, very important. And I could put it after my name, but I'd have to make up some words. No, PhD is post-hole digger.
Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. LMFST.
Hey!
I'm never going to forget that from? Time. Yeah, I know.
Oh. I remember that. That's a signature line of our tennis Tom.
That is indeed.
And what radio show sponsored Lucky Strike? You guys remember?
Was that the
a weekly radio show? Lucky Strike was the sponsor.
Well, your Jack Benny.
Your
hit
parade.
Parade.
Yeah.
Your hit parade.
Top songs were.
Yeah.
Was that little doggy in the window?
Fine,
fine memory.
I listen to hit parade every Saturday night on the radio.
That sounds like a fine, fine memory. So the other question is, when people are healing, what do they do wrong?
Well,
what are the mistakes that you see, especially within the online community, because these are the people who are going to be listening to this? What do they need to know to heal? And so far you've said it's important to do a bunch of learning, but at a certain point it's about, rather than learning, it's about living.
Yeah, what,
we've also
so
talked about.
What do people do wrong in healing? That's
yeah.
The question. Well,
yeah.
I think we've covered it, scattered all over, but I'll try to sum it up again real quickly, you know?
True.
I think the first thing is the calendar watching. You know, and that's tough because every day and every week and every month that goes by and they don't feel like they've made progress or as much progress as they would like, they start thinking, I'm not going to heal. But that's not true. It's not true, you know. And so you have to forget all about the time frames. And Dr. Sofer helped me with that in about the year 2000. I was watching the months go by. I said, it's almost a year now. And he said, you've got to stop that. You got to stop that. It puts more pressure on you to hit a number. And so it's when, I'll say this, you will heal when you totally forget about healing. That's the irony. That's the irony. You know, when you totally forget about what your body's doing or how far you've come. And
if I totally noticed that.
Yeah, if I, so true. If I should be journaling more, if I should be doing this or that. If you're thinking all these things you should be doing to heal, you're not healing. You're still TMSing in the sense that you've pulled yourself away from the emotions and the purposeful life and the passion in your life. You're missing all these good days on something that you would love to be doing with your life because you're still waiting to heal to jump into life.
And the goal of the TMS is to get you to focus on the body, and that's exactly what you're doing. You're focusing on the body. Mission accomplished.
So I think the first thing, in my opinion, the very first thing that they do wrong is they try to heal. That's the first thing, okay? And then the calendar watching, okay? And then some of them have the fear of change is tough. Like I said, your pain's there. It's the thing that you can count on. You know, and I'll give you a quick example. When I healed after 30 years, I started having a panic attack and I didn't even know what it was. You know, I didn't know. I'd never really understood it. And you think that you're dying, of course, you know, I'm dying. I had to pull off the road in my car and I couldn't breathe. And the world was spinning, you know, and I didn't know what was going on. And I realized, wow, Dr. Sarno was so right. The pain had been there for 30 years to keep me from experiencing that. And so the pain was doing me a favor. And so I tried to talk to Mala about that a little bit. You know, it's your friend. You know, it's your friend. It's there. You can always count on it. I'm not saying people don't want to heal. But when you choose between a knife and a gun, you know, which one? You're going to get pain either way. We choose the symptom over the actual sensation of the emotions because the brain obviously is more afraid of the emotions than the pain. Or that's why it gives us the pain, you know. And so trying to heal is bad. Calendar watching is bad. Fear of change is keeping people. Doubt that they have TMS is another one. I started to say earlier, several people have contacted me. They've been given a TMS diagnosis, and then they've gone and had surgery. And then their pain got worse, much worse. And a lot of that is that they're angry at themselves for going to do the surgery. You know, and I said, now you've got to just forgive yourself. You know, you can still heal with surgery. But you've got to forgive yourself and stop beating yourself up, you know. But they're hoping for that quick fix, you know. The TMS fix is sometimes a long grueling process. And surgery, they're hoping, bam, all my pain can be done today. Yeah, right? So, and sometimes the placebo is powerful enough that it will actually work. But I can tell you something, the surgery didn't do anything, you know. I gave a lecture a couple weeks ago in Youngstown to 47 women in the Youngstown Women's League. And that very day, I printed out a paper to show them. These doctors were doing this thing called vertebroplasty. It's like a cement that they inject into the disc when people break their backs. And they accidentally, I don't know how they did it, but they accidentally injected it into the wrong disc. Okay, I don't know how that happens. But the people healed quickly. They looked at each other and they said, could it be that what we're doing is nothing? That these people are healing because they believe they're getting healed from this. So they set up a study to study this, and the study concluded it. It's all a placebo, all of it. You know, the broken bone in the back heals naturally. Like Dr. Sarno said, nature by nature's intelligent design, it heals itself. If we're not healing, whether it's disease or pain, something is preventing healing. Something's preventing healing. So the doubt that they have TMS. And the other thing I mentioned was the divided mind concept. People aren't getting the concept of why he called his book The Divided Mind. And of course, most of you know, my book was called A Mind Divided. And he stole my title, but it's okay. You know, it's his baby. But I at least I know he and I were on the exact same page, you know. It was the sudden realization to me that I wasn't happy in my marriage. I had fooled myself, I had deceived myself in my brain into believing that my marriage was just fine and dandy. That's the deception part of my title, you know. When we deceive ourselves, self-deception means you've convinced yourself that the lie is the truth. And I see it every day when people consult with me. You know, they're not truly happy in certain things. They don't like their jobs. Or even though they'll say, they try to convince themselves that they like their jobs because they know that some people can't find jobs. And they don't want to feel, you know, unappreciative that they have a job. And so they've talked themselves into the fact that they actually like this. And so, you know, the superego can be very controlling. When you work with Jungian analysts, that's the first thing they show you. How dominating and how controlling your superego is over you. You actually are buying into the fact that that's who you are, that person, that you're pretending to be to other people. Dr. Sarno was a brilliant, brilliant man. That was a good thing. That was a good way to end that. Those are the big things that I see when it comes to healing, you know. And of course, trying all these other things, you know, I believe I have TMS, but I'm going to the chiropractor tomorrow and I'm going to have acupuncture and I'm getting my leg lengthened the next day, you know. They believe it. And they're still doing all these other therapeutic modalities. You have to stop all of those therapeutic modalities, you know. If you really believe in TMS, well, a lot of people will tell me, I believe in TMS 100%. I believe that I have it. You know, I said, oh, really? Bend over and touch the floor for me. No. You know, I said, why? There's nothing wrong with your back. If you believe you have TMS, you know nothing's wrong with your body. Nothing. You can bend right over and touch the floor. No. There's a little doubt there. You know, there's a little bit of doubt. So it's complex. You know, it's complex. But the process is working. It's not working anywhere near as fast as people want it to. Okay. And I think I made that point clear in my book. I was getting more frustrated as the year was coming up. I was getting more frustrated. And I was getting up onto a year and a half. I was getting more frustrated. But it's the fact that I was so frustrated, it was causing it to be protracted. I finally gave up beating my body into submission. And I finally realized I'm fighting against myself here. I began the next 200 pages of the book was talking about how to live better, you know, to soothe myself, to actually get into life, to enjoy my life more. There's another thing, joy, pure joy. These people don't experience it anymore. Joy is so pure. It's the absence of the divided mind. Joy is living in the moment with this big smile on your face that you can't stop. You can't stop smiling because you're so happy and you don't even know why, you know, you don't even know why. How many people who experienced that with TMS pain, you know? I probably didn't laugh for 7 years when I was in this severe pain, you know? When the laughter quits, the TMS comes in. And so the people really need to experience joy. And that's all a matter of perception, isn't it? It's a matter of perception. I mean, you could cry at a sunrise. It's so beautiful. But most people look at it and they just take it for granted. You know, hey, sun's coming up. My pain's probably going to be bad today.
So in some sense, that's what helped you turn the, is that what, do you think what helped you turn the corner was learning about joy and learning to relax and unwind and live a different life?
Right. Yeah. That's thanks to the good doctor again. You know, I was fighting myself by trying to beat my inner child into submission and it got me going.
Yeah.
But it wasn't getting anywhere. I even made the statement in the book, a man divided against himself cannot stand. And I said, I misunderstood him, you know? And I realized that, you know, that this isn't getting it. It's deeper than this. And I began to realize I needed to really enjoy my life again. I wasn't enjoying it. You know, and nobody is really, nobody that's in severe pain can enjoy their life. But that is a matter of perception. You know, it's all laid out for us every day to enjoy. It's there. It's beautiful. It's laid out. You know, the friends are there, the family. I don't know if you remember in the book because it's such a long book, but I said, you know, I started talking to people in the grocery store and I started seeing, you know, making friends everywhere I went again. You know, I was isolating myself, protecting myself, hiding away from people. One of the first things that happens is they become more agoraphobic. They don't want to go out as much, but it's essential to stay social because it comes back to that uniting again and being feeling connected once again, helping people. Getting it off your chest and feeling how other people feel, all of those things. They all sound like old cliches, but it works. It works powerfully. And of course, the great philosophers and spiritual leaders of all time knew that. You know, it's all about, we're all one, you know, we're all one. And But America is a very isolated, country. Very isolated. What's the first thing people do when they get wealthy? They isolate them. They go into a gated community.
Yeah, it's sad. It is a sad thing. Okay, so we do have two slightly more technical questions. I think we need to let you go, though. You've been sharing.
Go ahead. There was a lady that started to ask a question, too. I heard her voice.
Well, that might have been me. I'm North Star.
Oh, North Star, yes. The great North Star.
The great North Star. The guide of us all. Helps us navigate.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well. This has been so good. And I have to say hi to Walt, too. I've been really looking
hi
forward
there,
to
North
your
Star.
Voice, Walt.
Yeah,
you're
thank
like
you,
the,
dear.
One of the other celebrities between you and Steven. So excited to hear your voice.
Oh, thank you. Great to hear yours.
Well, my question, Steve, is a quickie, and I'm like 99% this is TMS, but one of the issues that I've dealt with has been my Achilles tendons. And I mean, I was in PT for a year and got that settled down. Well, it's jumped over to my other ankle now. And I had read in one of the books that, that he said to be sure and check out if you've got visible swelling or bruising or whatever. I know if I go back, I'm going to get the shoulder shrug again. I don't know. I threw out my orthotics. I threw out my heel lift. So I've had good times, but here I'm dealing with the swelling again. Does TMS do tricky stuff like that too with visible swelling?
Yeah, I had it. Dr. Sarno had swelling with TMS and Dr. Sofer had swelling with TMS. I remember my Achilles heel would swell out too. And then it would go to the other Achilles heel. And then it would go back. It would go back and forth. And that was one of the more debilitating things for me was the Achilles. And I guess that's why they call it an Achilles heel. Right? It's an Achilles heel because it can actually stop your functioning.
Oh, it's been a tough one. But like today, I went out and walked 2 miles and I cranked up that Twisted Sister song, "We're Not Gonna Take It." So I'm moving forward in it, but it is kind of scary because I get afraid of the tendon rupturing, or I guess there's that key word, I'm afraid.
Fear is what your brain wants. It's okay. Creating something that you will fear. Your emotions are hiding behind the fear, not the symptom. You're hiding behind the fear of the symptom. And so if you didn't fear that Achilles, it would just shift. But you do fear it. And so it's found a nice, safe home where you can hide all of your frustrations in. And you know your personal life. You know probably what's going on and what your life was like growing up and all those things and why there would be a need for something like that, I suppose. Most of the people I talk to can trace their symptoms back to events. Like me, my wife gets paralyzed. And I'm in the chiropractor every day for like 3 months. And I don't know how I could not associate that. My back was locking up. People will say my knee's killing me. I can't walk. Well, what's happening? Well, nothing much. My dad died though. Oh, is that all? Just your dad died? I said, what time did it start? Oh, it started the day after my dad died. Do you think it has anything to do with it? because we repress things and we're not used to correlating these events because we don't feel them. The ego looks at it and it can't take it. It can't take the full brunt of the emotional loss. And so what do? We just repress it into the body where we think it's gone forever, but it's still there. It's always there. The unconscious always remembers that in real time. It doesn't understand linear time. Your pain from years ago is still there. We learn how to live around it. The unconscious lives every day. It doesn't understand past or future. But so I'm sure that you understand, the personality type and all those things, but it's found a place in you where it can hide if it's that painful, and I don't know. Where are you? I forget where you're located.
I'm in Montana.
Oh, Montana. Yeah. There's a lot of people out that way. A lot of people in Montana, Wyoming, and Colorado contact me.
Oh, is that? Well, I figure it's the long winters.
Yeah, it could be, it could be depressing without sunlight or something. I don't know. But it doesn't help any. It doesn't help any, But it's the same thing. The TMS healing, there's so many different angles of attack to go after it. And the whole idea is to let it go. Have the strength to let go of if your life didn't go the way you wanted it to, or you're not in a relationship that you like or whatever. We can also be very deceiving, too, and make ourselves think that we like what we really don't like. And It becomes complicated, you know. You know, I don't know how long you've had it, but, you know, I always try to get people to go talk to somebody, you know. I made a mistake by not talking to people. I should have. Right after my wife was paralyzed, we were 26 years old, and these psychiatrists from University Hospitals of Cleveland came up to talk to me. Would you like to talk to somebody? And I kept going, what for? I didn't know why they wanted to talk to me. You know, 30 years later, I understand. I understand. They figured, but I didn't feel it as a trauma. It was just one of those things I just had to get through. I got to hunker down and get through this, you know. I didn't know the magnitude of how it affected me. But I had fooled myself, you know. But hopefully you can talk to somebody in Montana. Montana? Is that how they pronounce it out there?
Yeah, not quite. Well, it's good. The forum has been really helpful. And I've got some very good friends that I'm close with. But it's comforting to me to hear, you know, particularly with the Achilles, that others have dealt with that, you know, just looking for that, I know the connection and the affirmation, yes, it's TMS, but, right. You know, it has been a while and, you know, we're still in kind of a stressful situation and we have been, and well, hello, we've had a special needs kid that we've raised. So that's been a pretty consistently high stress level for many years. So I think learning to navigate that even right now is life is changing for us. And yeah, it's an ever moving target, isn't it?
Yeah, you've got all the hallmarks, of course, all the things necessary. And I would be very careful of attacking your heels. Like, you know, I'm not going to take it anymore. It's cool. I did it. It was very important for me to do that, but I wouldn't go out day after day after day challenging it, because that's TMSing. Because in a way, that's physical therapy. You're focusing back on it again, you know. So you forget about your heels, you know, and you just go have a good day, you know. Go take some piano lessons or singing lessons or whatever, you know. Do something that you want to do, and you do it without fear. That you just say, my body's fine, you know. But, you know, then there are those deeper things, those deeper aspects, you know. Special needs children, that's a lot of demands, you know. And, of course, all these things are triggers. Getting fired from your job, somebody dying, and all, they're triggering us back to an earlier childhood. That's where the deeper fear and anxiety really resides, but that gets really complicated. But I wish I could wave a wand and help everybody. But part of growing, I believe part of the reason we're here and alive is the spiritual expansion, the growth of the spirit. And part of these things are part of that process, is being strong enough to let go of worries and fears and that. And it's an ever vigilant process. It sure is, you know, and takes a lifetime of transformation.
I mean, thanks so much. I appreciate that.
It's nice to hear your voice.
Thank you.
Any final questions? Philly Joe in the Fuse chat room said, Steve, did your ringing ears ever come back, or was it a one-time symptom?
No, they have returned on occasions, maybe 3 times in the last 10 years. You know, that is the paragon of don't pay attention to it. You know, that
That's
one there.
True. I have ringing in the ears, and when I keep busy, I don't even hear it.
Yeah. It's about shifting your awareness, like I was talking about earlier.
Yeah, it really is.
Focus on what you're doing, what you need to do, and it fades. You know?
Yeah, then I don't hear it at all.
Yeah.
For everybody, it was wonderful hearing from all of you. And we've put a lot into our heads tonight for a couple of hours. And I find that you need to unwind before you go to bed.
Oh, I'm going to go get a glass of wine.
A glass of wine is wonderful, or tea or hot milk.
Did he say unwind or unwind?
Unwind with wine.
Rewind.
And do some deep breathing and meditation and just quiet down.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, you brought up something earlier that people underestimate breathing, how much it can heal you.
It's incredible how important that is.
Yeah, Andrew Weil said it was the doorway to control of the autonomic nervous system, where all of these problems emanate. We don't have any direct routes to the autonomic nervous system, but breathing's the only one. The breathing can
actually, it's very calming. Every book that I've read or any website that I've gone to on meditation and yoga and everything else, Tai Chi, it all starts with deep breathing.
Yeah,
and it's the core the course.
Life starts with deep breathing, right? The very first thing is the deep breathing. And that is so important, Walt. I'm glad you brought that up, because it's very hard to hold tension in a body that's breathing from the belly deeply.
Yeah. But we're under such stress and, you know, anxiety and busy lives, we breathe shallow.
Yes.
We don't breathe properly. But deep breathing from the make a balloon out of your belly, breathe in through your nose, hold it a few seconds, and then breathe it out through your mouth, holding your stomach in. And I'll tell you, after a few times, if I'm in bed and can't sleep, a few times of that, I'm asleep.
Good point. I'm glad you brought that up.
Wise Good. Words, and perhaps we can all try it out after we wrap up. So perhaps it is time to do that. Steve, do you have any final words? I mean, it feels like we've come around in a circle and we've really, you know, talked about some of these important ideas about how you really do it.
There's a lot more things to talk about, of course, you know, you get into the minutia of all these things and that, and I do that sometimes, but I would just like to end by thanking you and this peer review network, you know, for looking at my book and, you were kind enough to review the chapters and kind enough to let me on and talk sometimes, you know, and you are doing an amazing job. You know, I don't know if you're getting enough credit, but, without this, there's no central hub. You've provided a central station, Grand Central Station for TMS here, and you should be congratulated.
Well, thank you so much, Steve. That means a lot. And but so many people on the call, like Walt, like North Star, like Bruce, like Herbie.
It's a community. You know, exactly.
It is a wonderful community, and we're going to give it the best software infrastructure we can and keep on building.
Cool.
But thank you. Any other final words, or is that it?
About a third of the people were in Europe and couldn't chime in. They were really disappointed. So there's a lot of people that would like to hear these things, but I'm just going to, if I do it again, I'm going to talk about the same things, you know? So
we love
all it. All you need to do is direct them to the YouTube.
Well, I always say that, you know, TMS healing is about the basics. And I think that you did a great job. And this whole group did a great job of talking about the basics during this call. You know, we talked about a lot of specifics, but in the background were always those same basics. You know, managing fear, learning how to live your life, finding purpose, finding joy, where your attention is. It was a pleasure to listen to, and I look forward to listening to it again.
And that's very good. And I would end, like I ended my book with an 18 font bold: happiness first, and good health will certainly follow. I would have these people look at their lives and just tell me, are you happy? Are you truly happy, deeply happy? Do you feel joy every second of your life? Well, you can never feel it every second, but do you feel it often enough, you know? And I don't think, I think people have fooled themselves into believing that they're doing okay when the TMS shows them that they're not happy, that they're not doing as well as they want to be. And we said that earlier, you know, deep inside, we're not aligned with what we want to be doing or our life's wanted to be going. But that's all a matter of perception. You can see joy where you once saw sorrow, you know, and that takes a transformation of the individual. People will often say to me, how do I stop being angry? I can't do that. I can't teach someone that. I can't teach somebody how to forgive somebody. That comes from within. And all TMS healing comes from within. No doctor can help you. They can encourage you. People hire me. I just basically am a cheerleader. You know, I give them some confidence. I can't heal them. I'm not a healer. I show them how to heal themselves. It all comes from with them. And that guy, Joe Dispenza, he was in that movie I sent you, Emotion. He's got a project out there I'm interested in. I send them to you because I don't want to buy them. I'll let you review them first. But it's called You Are the Placebo. You Are the Placebo. That sounds pretty interesting to me. You know, it's about your deep belief. If you believe you're going to heal, you're going to heal. If you don't believe you're going to heal, you won't heal. You know, you have to take it by the reins and ride off into the sunset. But that's very good. I appreciate it. It was fun here. I liked hearing all the voices of these people. That was fun.
Indeed. Thanks so much, Steve. Everyone else listening, we do this, well, we don't do it like this every week, but every week there is a discussion group. We're always doing a book. You are always welcome to call up, listen in, do whatever you like. Thank you so much, Steve, for joining us tonight.
Thank you. And you guys have a good night.
All right. Good night, Steve.